session number 23192, Reel 6.
Rory Griffiths, Reel 6. You were talking about your diet in the sergeant's mess.
Oh yes, sometimes an egg. The inevitable porridge, which of course in the Scots Grey was referred to as burgoo. Quite why, I don't know, I never found. I think it must be from the Scots somewhere. lunch. Was usually a light meal because they seem to concentrate more on evening meals. It wasn't the time really. Lunch would be light, sort of cold meat or something like that. But later on, around 6-ish, yes, about 6. A roast meal with all the trimmings and that. Not a lot, you know, they weren't sumptuous meals at all.
Were your rations brought in from the UK or from local areas?
Well, they came actually through the army. I think a lot, yes, came from the UK, because that was the one thing that struck us all. As soon as we got into Germany, no, in fact, indeed. And from D-Day onwards, white bread. And by white bread, I mean white bread. Because in the UK at that time, you won't remember, but it was a sort of light brown. They mixed the thing. But white gleaming bread. And certainly in Germany, it was white bread all the way. And the poor old Germans, I mean, they had this ghastly, thick, dark brown. It looked awful. But I think I was sampled some once, somebody gave me some, but it wasn't very pleasant at all. Certainly white bread. But by that time, I think the field bakeries were in position in Germany. Yes, certainly. Compo rations were still issued to a certain extent, and some of our meals were still compo rations prepared in the kitchen. And of course, later, as time went on, as the regiment reorganized and the national servicemen began to develop trades, so the crews were made up, and the vehicles, the tanks, started to go out on maneuvers, out onto Lüneburg Heath. I think it was around this time I went off on a tank commander's course. Amazingly enough, to Belsen.
And what was your reaction seeing Belsen?
Well, by that time it had been cleaned up. It was renamed Bergen. It was the Royal Armoured Corps training centre.
How much information had the ordinary soldier had at that time about what had happened at Belsen?
Next to nothing at all. Naturally the Germans, if they knew about it, never discussed it. The war was seldom discussed.
Did the local German people discuss their attitude to Hitler?
Not really. No, I can't ever remember. No.
So life went on and
yeah. The
regiment got formed?
That's it. I remember going to a wedding in Lüneburg, because of course by that time some of the chaps had started marrying German girls, who were quite pleasant, and used to come into the mess and everything there. And I went to this wedding, I remember that. By that time, the mess waiters, Germans, had taught me how to do German arms drill. And in this wedding, in the wedding party afterwards, there were several old German gentlemen there and I picked up a broom and started giving myself German orders and doing German arms drill, which caused great merriment. And they came and slapped me on the leg. Ah, richtig! Well, that was great fun. That became one of my sort of stock in trades to entertain people.
So your command of the German language had grown considerably?
Yes, it had actually, I suppose. It wasn't perfect by any means, but through constantly talking to them, most of us sort of picked up quite a lot. You needed to. It was best to be able to do it.
Sorry? After you had some operations out to Belsen, Bergen, where did the regiment go then?
We got to 1949. Because by that time there were very grand parties going on. The Scots Greys always celebrated the Battle of Waterloo, 18th of June. That was a regimental holiday, well not a holiday, it was sports, and a grand ball in the sergeant's mess afterwards. So by that time, yes, we got to 1950-51.
Did you have many outstanding senior officers in the regiment?
Very nice officers. Some very good colonels. One in particular who was a great favourite in the regiment was Dougie Stewart. He rode with Colonel Llewellyn, who was the famous horse fox hunter in the Olympics. He was in that team. And he really was marvellous chap. And so indeed were the colonels who followed. And not really very much happened. It seemed to be manoeuvres, drill square, and then came 1952. And after 7 years, we left Germany. Went home to Aldershot briefly, and then off to Libya, where we went to a place called Barchi. It was just off the Jebel Akdar. It wasn't very far from Benghazi. A lonely place. The barracks was dominated. It was an Italian, ex-Italian barracks, dominated by a huge monument to the Italians who were massacred there by the Arabs in 1910. They were about 60 or 70 miles from Benghazi. Barchi itself wasn't very interesting. There was a little village. I got to going down there at odd times. The dominant tribe, in fact the king of Libya at that time, was named Senussi, and this was the name of the tribe, and others in this little village had an Arab market and everything were named Senussi. And they were very courteous. One place I'd go into, and immediately the owner, Senussi, would send a boy for coffee. Thick, black coffee with a glass of water in a little tiny mug. Well, that was all right.
What was the regiment's role there?
Role? I am not terribly sure. It was a posting. It was really more for training. Because with our centurions, you know, from time to time we would go down into the desert. And of course the desert there was ideal for firing exercises. You could fire off live rounds. I didn't have the opportunity to go to Cyrene, which is the ruins of the Wadi El Kuf. Very interesting indeed, these remains, and at that time scarcely ever visited. And then, yes. In March 1953, my squadron and myself, by that time I was a squadron sergeant major.
How many men were you responsible for?
Roughly 100. Three troops of tanks, four tanks per troop.
Did you welcome that responsibility?
Oh, yes, great. I'd forgotten to mention, of course, that I had been an SQMS. I was, just before we left Germany, I was made SQMS of B Squadron, as Quartermaster Sergeant. Being stuck in a stores didn't really appeal to me very much. Although I must admit, in Libya, before I was promoted, my task when they were out on exercise in the desert was to take rations and petrol down. That was good. Actually being, you know, reading the map, what you can make of desert, you know, with a compass, by day and night, and getting down to the squadron, and I always remember my annual report said that he always turned up on time in the right place with his supply vehicles.
Which were?
So
were they Bedfords or?
Yes, the Bedford 30 weight. No, 3 tonners, with 1500 weights as well. Anyway, I was promoted squadron sergeant major, and in March 1943 was sent with the squadron to Egypt.
1953. Had you by this time re-enlisted? Because
yes.
You originally went in for 10 years.
Yes, I did. Yes, I had. I'd signed on for 22 years. Well, life was interesting. I couldn't think of what on earth I'd want to do in civistry. I was a soldier and that was it. Well, the reason for our being sent to Egypt was, of course, by that time, the 5th in the Skilling Dragoon Guards had returned from Korea. And they'd been, naturally, in batches, were being granted home leave from the canal zone of Egypt, and so needed a squadron to keep them up to strength in case of trouble, because Egypt at that time was a little bit iffy. It's the early days of all our friends, Nasser and company. So we fitted in with the regiment at first.
Where were you based?
I'm trying to remember the name of the place. My wife will know.
Cairo?
No. Yes, so this was at Chandon, where the skins, as we called them, were stationed. And we simply carried out the normal regimental duties alongside the regiment. Later, we were detached and moved north when trouble began with the population of Egypt. And we were attached to workshops of the 6th Airborne Division and stayed in their camp until it was time for us to go.
What did you think of them as a fighting force?
Nice crowd of chaps. We used to have great fun in their mess tent because everything was intense. It was great. One night, I happened to go to a barracks called Ladysmith Barracks, which housed the WRAC, where I met a young lady who, in fact, was going on to be released. She was going back to England the next day. So we went down to the Warrant Officers and Sergeants Club and had a bit of a party and said goodbye. Later on, There's another story about her, because I sat in there. Now, from Egypt, we went back to Libya.
Did you see any action in Egypt?
No. But we had to walk around armed, and no vehicle. In the next camp, there was a cinema, and we used to take a three-tonner with the lads at night, and there had to be one of them armed just to go along the road into the next camp to go to the cinema.
Was there much terrorist activity?
We heard of it, but I've no personal experience of any.
So you went back to Libya?
We returned to Libya by this time, 1953. Not much again back to the old routine. Managing the squadron, you know. The 1st of May 1954, we sent a squad down to Tobruk as guard of honour for the Queen. And she came, passed through there. You asked me earlier about officers and their kindness. We went down into the desert firing. Actually, I forgot to say that in Egypt, I had picked up a complaint with my left ear, known as otitis media, a sort of inflammation of the inner ear. And when I got back to Libya, Barchi, this trouble sort of welled up. And we went down into the desert firing, and of course, as soon as the guns opened up, I had this violent pain and a discharge from this ear. And so we went back to the camp, because we were miles out in the desert. And that night, one of the captains came across with a bottle of gin and said, "Sir Major, you bed down and this might help you," which I thought was very kind of him. I didn't drink at all that night, but it did sort of help, and although I didn't get much sleep. Anyway, they took me back to Bartry the following morning, and they sent me down to Benghazi to the hospital, where they injected penicillin, and fortunately it cleared up. But because of that, they felt it was a bit dicey, my going back with tanks again. And so for a while, I took over as the caterer of the officers' mess, which was very interesting indeed. I quite enjoyed it. It's just a matter of organising the Arab waiters and the soldiers who were barmen and batmen and people like that, and the general running of the mess. just by luck during that period, the adjutant came dashing up to me one morning. "Oh, Sergeant Major, something awful. King Sanusi is coming with his court to have lunch today. What on earth are we going to give them? You better go down to the Arab market." So I took a couple of the Arab waiters down to the Arab market and organised the appropriate food. In actual fact, I don't know what the king thought. This meat, huge lump of meat, was taken back, and the cook minced it all up and turned it into pasties. But anyway, of course, I mean, at dinners, dinner nights in the mess, my job was to stand in attendance behind the commanding officer, usually, but just to watch and organise the meals being served. And on this occasion, I had to do the same for the king. It was very, very interesting. Anyway, that business cleared up, fortunately, and I returned to duty just in time to take the squadron to Jordan. This was in July 54. Our job was to go to a place called Maan, M-A-apostrophe-A-N, and with tanks that were already there to help train the Arab Legion, which was the army of Jordan at that time. And we went by tank landing craft through the Med down to Port Said, then on to Suez, and then across to Aqaba, which is not very far from Israel, just across the water, and then up through the hills, the Mountains of the Moon, I think they were called, certainly looked like that from the air, to this lonely camp. It was quite a respectable camp with buildings, you know, and a small detachment of the Arab Legion and a little village. It was quite pleasant. Had a swimming pool.
How did your men and the vehicles cope with the heat in that part of the world?
Well, I suppose they felt. I suppose we all felt hot. Mind you.